Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Mac Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Mac Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D-Factor. The Mac Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Mac.
I've got the power!
Let's do a live radio broadcast. Welcome to the Power Hour. My name is Mac Newton. Sitting in with me in her customary chair, the fabulous Natasha.
Nice to be here.
Yes. Nice to have you two here, darling. Certainly is. And of course, the magic man, Zach Geist, behind the glass.
Thank you, everyone. Good to be here again.
Yes. Thank you. Hey, gang, we have a great show on tap for you guys, and I'm ready to go and really excited about it. As you can tell, we've got some very special music for you. This is the father of all amplified guitar music, the late, great Charlie Christian, where, as you heard from me last week, Wes Montgomery, from this recording right here called Solo Flight, a classic by Charlie Christian, in which he was sharing the bandstand with Benny Goodman. Of course, with Benny Goodman was a great clarinetist, but we do know that Benny Goodman was widely known to accept credit for things he didn't. But anyway, that's another story. So anyway, Charlie Christian got his start with the Benny Goodman Orchestra, actually, as a string bass player. Born in 1919 in Dallas, Texas. Again, so many of these great musicians were born into families of musical parents. And certainly, Charlie Christian is no exception. His father was, he was a saxophonist, a horn player of some type. My brain is failing me now. But anyway, I do know that both his parents were musicians. The mother was a piano player in church, and the father, I'm going to go with trumpet. And so I want to share that with you because so many of our great, great piano players, guitarists of today, in addition to being born into musical families like our upcoming musical guest host, like Charlie Christian and the great Kenny Burrell, but not the late Kenny Burrell, the great Kenny Burrell, who is still with us and playing fabulous music, was tremendously influenced by Charlie Christian, as well as Wes Montgomery, and even George Benson told me that he was influenced, but not as much as Wes Montgomery, who copied every note for note from Solo Flight that we opened with. We're also going to spotlight the music of Kenny Burrell, because he was a debutante or a devotee of Charlie Christian, and you can tell in his single note playing, very, very similar. Because, you know, back in the day, and I mean way back in the day, prior to amplification, which didn't happen in jazz music until, probably the late 1920s, the guitar was just an impractical instrument for jazz. It was mostly used for, you know, street corner blues players and stuff like that. What you saw in jazz bands was a banjo, where you had a very sharp sound and it could be overheard. The singers were singing through megaphones, you know, and things like that. But the guitarist was sitting up front with big forearms like Popeye, creating the rhythm section. What you had was a bass player, a guitarist, and a drummer. And then finally, Charlie Christian, with the amplification and microphones, brought the guitar out front where it could be on the same level playing field with the trumpet and the saxophone, and it has never been the same since. The guitar has taken off and been amplified and changed up, and now it can even speak. So it has become a major player, not only in the field of jazz, but in rhythm and blues and rock and pop music, and acoustically, as well as amplification. But it's through the amplified guitar that has really changed the jazz world. Hey, Magic Man, give us a little bit of Kenny Burrell over there, would you please? Kenny Burrell, born in Detroit, Michigan. Tremendously influenced, as you can tell, by comparing the line notes that we heard with Charlie Christian as we opened the show. But Kenny Burrell, one of the most respected, highly respected, not just guitar players, but composers and teachers. Teaching in places as highly respected, their musical colleges of UCLA. But again, Kenny was born in a musical family. His mother sang in the Second Baptist Church Choir in Detroit, Michigan, and also played the piano. His father played the banjo and the ukulele, and that's how he got his start on the guitar. So you see, folks, if you got kids, introduce them to music. That's where it starts, early on in life. Get them, you know, and if you play and you gave it up, start again, so your kids can see you playing. And just music is such a great thing to have in your life. I love playing. I could be watching television and I'll reach over and pick up my guitar, and sometimes I even lay in bed, I'll reach over and pick one up and play it acoustically and just practice all the time. And right now I'm just it's just a big part of my life. I'm not trying to be a jazz musician. I just like creating some music. But Kenny Burrell has just garnered the respect of the entire jazz world. One of the most gracious gentlemen that you're ever going to find. He also, as I say, credits Charlie Christian, Django Reinhardt as major influences. But as we're going to show you later on, as he gets into some blues, where he does what I call Charlie's Blues, which is a tribute to Charlie Parker, where he makes his guitar sound like Charlie Parker's saxophone, okay? You say, I call it Charlie's Blues because I really don't know the name of this particular cut. So anyway, he listened to T-Bone Walker, Muddy Waters, Dizzy Gillespie, John Coltrane, Percy Heath, Milt Jackson, all these jazz greats that help influence his playing. But again, right at the top of that list, Charlie Christian. And again, Charlie Christian, he was the first. So you can imagine. Can you imagine Charlie Christian? And we're going to get the Magic Man and get Charlie Christian back up over here so you can hear a little bit more of that. It was called a Solo Flight, and it was the first amplified jazz guitar hit of all time, recorded in 1941. Again, he was on stage with the Benny Goodman Orchestra. I think that's cut 13 on that. You'll hear the same kind of line playing that you just heard with Kenny Burrell. So imagine how far ahead of his time was Charlie Christian in the late 1930s and the early 40s, playing playing amplified guitar that the world heard for the first time here with Solo Flight. Check it out. Of course, we know that back in that day, it was all improvised. So he was just kind of kicking it as he went along. There really wasn't line play in the orchestra for the guitar player at that time. But that soon changed. The guitar came out front to assume a place of respectability. And nowadays, well, we know with guitarists like Kenny Burrell and George Benson and our local jazz giants like Bill Moya, you know, and other guitar players around town like Eric Bart, guys who are tremendously talented, even though not recognized in the same vein as a Charlie Christian or Kenny Burrell. Wow! That's awesome! 1941! That's incredible. You like that, Zach?
You're saying, you know, he's definitely trailblazing at the time. You know,
no doubt about
it. Sounds like what you hear now, but he was the first guy doing it, so Everybody else is just picking up.
Exactly. Now you know where it all came from. It's amazing how much we hear in that of what players are doing today and still learning from his creative genius, Mr. Charlie Christensen, ladies and gentlemen. But only here on the Power Hour. There you go. I hope you enjoyed that. I get to talking about Charlie Christian and Kenny Burrell, some of the greats. And, of course, Kenny Burrell is still with us. And, in fact, we're going to hear some more of his featured album today, which is Live, Midnight at the Village Vanguard, a live album, which the Village Vanguard, if you don't know, is sort of a coffee house restaurant in New York City. And this album was recorded somewhere in the mid-90s, as I recall. So anyway, that's it. Midnight at the Village Vanguard with Kenny Burrell. Pick it up. You will enjoy it. We're going to play you a couple more cuts as we get on with the show. My lineup today, of course, our musical guest host, Charlie Christian and Kenny Burrell. My early rant is going to be on people who change their minds. And my short segment is going to be on the eccentric difference in certain individuals. And my main topic, more on do you have a guilty personality? But first, as we do right here on the Power Hour, shout outs. Yeah, Pam and Pele, where are you at? Our singing group, I guess they're back in Holland. Okay, Andy over in Spain, didn't hear from you this week, so we have to assume the weather is still chilling out in the upper 60s, but sunny. Al down in South FLA. Veronica G. in the Philippines. We did hear from her. Still cloudy. I guess this is in the monsoon over there. Still cloudy. Weather in the lower 80s. Hula Girl right here in town. Pedro and the Bevzilla. Enjoyed our conversation this week, Peter. Look, I can feel the excitement in your voice. And I know where you're coming from because I'm there with you. And we're going to have you ready to go, okay? Take my word for it. Rosie Brown, and of course, Junior, we call him Ernest Spivey. That's our shout-outs for today, gang. Okay? Now, let's get my early rant out of the way. I wanted to sort of, not so much a rant as it is an opinion on people who change their minds. Well, I'm probably going to go a different way than you thought I was going to go on this. Changing your mind is not a sign of weakness at all. In other words, really, it's a sign of being a thinker. Okay? You know, the world that we live in is constantly changing. And the people around us are constantly changing. And as we weave our way through and around this world, we're constantly making decisions. We're making choices. And the thoughts, well, sometimes we make a choice and we make a decision. And then sometimes moments later, figure that we should have gone another direction. Well, the non-thinkers will just stay with that, even though they know it's not going to work. Hey, it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to change your mind. And I really, I dwell upon that a lot when I'm teaching my self-defense class for young women. I tell them in high school and in college that it's not only is it okay to change your mind, it's a strength. It's a sign of a strong character. That means that sometimes you might feel coerced into making a choice and you'll say, oh yes, I'll do it. Then later on, you'll rethink it and change your mind. And it's okay to change your mind. It's a sign that you're a thinker. It's a sign of strength, of character, and it's a sign that you're in charge of your world. So with all this change going on around you, your world itself, all the people, if you want to be effective in your relationships, if you want to be effective in your business, as I do, well, we've all got to be ready to change our minds day to day. Heck, what am I talking about? Not just day to day, hour by hour. You've got to be ready to change your mind. You just can't say, okay, I said that, I got to stick with it. No, you don't. No, you don't for a minute. You have permission to change your mind. You have the power to change your mind. And actually, if I'm going to rant about something, I'm going to rant about those people who know that the decision they've made is no longer effective and they won't change their mind. They're going to stick with it out of just pure stubbornness. That's really a sign of not being a thinker. That means that you're being controlled by outside circumstances more than anything else. You've got to be ready to change your mind moment by moment. It doesn't mean you're wishy-washy. That's what people think. They say, well, it means I'm wishy-washy. It means that you can't decide on something. No. What it means is that you're flexible. It means you're in control. It means that you're responsive. That's what it means. It means that you're willing to make choices and make decisions and be flexible in that decision making. Does that make sense to you? I think it makes sense to everyone who's listening. Okay? So anyway, my early rant today, don't let the opinions of others make you stick with a decision that you know is not going to work, even though you said it the first time. You have the power and permission to change your mind. It is now 16 minutes past the hour on a beautiful but rainy, albeit, afternoon. First time, I think, on a power hour ever, we've been able to say that it is raining in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. And it's raining on your brand new car, huh, Natasha?
It does.
Does that bum you out?
Oh, I don't like the rain on my new car. And it's really raining here, guys. It is.
But you know
serious
what?
Serious rain.
But you know what, though? If it's going to rain on your car, it's a good thing that it rains on your car when it's clean.
Well, my car is always clean. Of it's
course.
Brand new.
Yes, well.
I'm washing it every day.
And well, you should. That way, when it rains on it, it can't do any damage. See, if it rains on a dirty car, damages your finish, takes the shine off of it. So if it's going to rain, wash your car. There you go. If you get lucky, it won't rain. And what will you have? You'll have a clean car. There you go. Hey, gang, my name is Mac Noon, and this is the Power Hour. Do me a favor. If you like what you hear, you like the show, tell a friend. You want to send me a comment or have a question for me here? Then send it to my email address at 7, the number 7, SEVEN, spelled out, at macnewton.com. Now, don't be upset if I don't answer it on the email, but I might, if it's compelling enough, so make it compelling, like I got one compelling today we're going to share with you. And I'll share this email on the air, but rarely will I be on sitting on the keyboard typing out answers on the email. So anyway, send me an email, and maybe we'll talk about it right here on the air. In fact, let's get right to it. Yeah, email we want to share today. This is from David Zupek. Not sure where David is. Maybe he's right here in Phoenix. You never know. Good afternoon, Mac. I've followed your eating plan for a long time now, and it's amazing how healthy I've gotten because of you. Okay, the eating plan he's talking about, gang, is the 3-2 eating plan. We talk about it a lot here. The three things you can eat: meat, lean source protein, green vegetables, and fruit. And the two things you can drink: fruit juice and water. Okay? The 3-2 eating plan, it's got all that you need. The green vegetables, I've broken it down into what we call the big five: asparagus, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, spinach, and collard greens. Okay? Those are the, you might say, the steroids of the vegetable field. Okay, they're all like infused with steroids, and they're going to make you stronger and faster and bigger and more powerful and faster than you think. Okay, now the fruit juice and water. Well, that's going to fill you up with the vitamins and, of course, the hydration that you need. That's it. Well, he's been on this. He says, I first discovered you on the Rich Dad site, TV site. I think it's on the internet. That's what he's referring to is Robert Kiyosaki. You guys have probably heard of Robert. He's very, very well known worldwide because of his bestseller, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Well, since then, Robert has written several other books, and several in which I've been featured. He's got Rich Dad for Women. He's got, in fact, let me see. I think I have one right here. Yes, I do. And he's written several books, and he's got a brand new release on DVD called Shooting the Sacred Cow of Money. He says, why? Because knowledge is the new money. Robert, we're right on point with that. So anyway, Robert Kiyosaki has got an internet site called Rich Dad, and a lot of subscribers there, and I've done several programs with and for Robert, which are featured there, where I talk about the eating plan, I talk about fitness and other just success methods, and a lot of his followers are tuning into to the 3-2 eating plan. His question is this: do you have some recipes for cold lunches? He says, I purchased your 3-2 recipe book, and I'm a house painter and the night before I always cooked chicken so that I can take it with me for lunch the next day. The only problem is that it's cold because I work outside, and the cold chicken every day gets kind of boring after a while. Any other suggestions as to what to make up for cold lunches? Thanks for your time. Keep up the great work. Okay, David, here you go for that. You know, I'm a really, really big fan of those Tupperware dishes. A big fan of Tupperware. I mean, you can put ribs in there. You can put pork chops in there. You can put ribeye steaks in there. You can put anything you want in those Tupperware. Then they'll stay airtight and they'll stay fresh. And you know what you do? Rather than just eating it cold, just get in your car, take a trip to any gas station or 7-Eleven has a microwave in there. Go in there, and inside of the Tupperware dish, just pop one of the corners, zap it for about a minute. It's going to heat it up just right. You're good to go. You know, if you want to do this a couple of times, we'd give you a little variety, you know, And I know how, because I'm stuck here sometimes. So you know what I have? I've got a microwave back there in the back, and it allows me to heat things up and keep my 3-2 eating plan varied. So you don't want to eat the same thing every day. But there are a lot of things you can eat cold, like pork chops are fabulous eating cold. I've done that many, many times. But as Natasha will tell you, I'm not a big fan of cold food. I like to eat full food.
It's a great advice for everyone. Yeah. And Mac doesn't like cold food at all.
I really don't. So I think that Tupperware dishes are great for that. And with my restaurant, Mac Daddy's, One of our keynote deals was we had just mastered the art of to-go, and we had airtight to-go packages and huge cardboard containers that sealed up tight so it could keep our food hot for up to an hour. And I used to take my wings and things like that down to the baseball and basketball, well, to the baseball game. They wouldn't let you bring food into the basketball game. But at the baseball games, I'd take my little Mac Daddy's box right into the baseball games and sit there, and my wings and things would be perfectly hot. So the Tupperware dishes are great for that, David. So I hope that not only helps David, but hopes the rest of you as well. 24 minutes past the hour on a beautiful, albeit drizzly and rainy afternoon. Was it raining when you came in, Zach?
Yeah, it's been pretty stormy, which I said, you know, I know it's not with the Mac Newton line, but
oh, I'm good.
Yeah, even had some pretty serious hail yesterday. I was really pretty surprised.
Well, you got to be careful with that hail when you got that new car. So those, that hail will put dents in that car. That's why you saw Mac Daddy's got his underneath the cover over there. But you know what, though? I do enjoy different kinds of weather. You know, I love it sunny and hot. But we get 300-plus days of sunny, warm weather every year. So when you get something like this, it's kind of different. And you know what? It's another day, and I enjoy it. You know what? I kind of like today. It's got a different feel to it, fresh in the air, and you know, a little breezy, and I love it. I'm loving that. Well, anyway, let's get on here now. My short segment today is on the eccentric difference. Eccentric difference? What am I referring to? I'm talking about people who are described as eccentrics. You know, and I've been described as being an eccentric. But then again, I've always been different. I've always thought a little bit differently. And certainly now, I'm viewed to be a different kind of a thinker. When I was younger, sometimes the fact that I was different made me feel ill at ease, uncomfortable around what I thought were normal folks. Not anymore. I revel in being different. I love the fact that I think differently than most. I love the fact that I see the world from a different slant. It makes me who I am. And if you've sort of been different, don't feel bad about that. Revel in that eccentricity. In fact, Dr. David Weeks, a clinical neuropsychologist at the Royal Edinburgh Hospital in Scotland, did a 10-year scientific study of thousands of the most different people among us. I mean, you know, those people we call eccentrics. And this is what he had to say. He said, a lot of people assume that eccentricity is a mild form of insanity. And it's even been described as that. Well, he found in his studies that's not the case at all. He found that eccentrics are very creative and very curious. They usually have vivid visual imaginations, extremely high intelligence, and a mischievous sense of humor. Now, what am I describing? Madness? Let me just go over that again. Very creative, very curious. I like that. How about you, Zach? Yeah, thumbs up from the magic man. How about you, Natasha?
I'm thinking of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David. He's like extreme example of eccentric person.
Well, you know what? He's a pretty successful one too, I might add. Okay. All right, here we go. Let's take it a little further. Very creative, curious, a vivid visual imagination, and let's face it, the ability to visualize and see your future is a key element to success. Extremely high intelligence and a mischievous sense of humor, able to see the humor in almost everything they do. And that allows them to not take themselves too seriously. People who take themselves so seriously sometimes, they don't have the ability to laugh at themselves and see the humor. And we do know humor heals. We know that the more you're able to smile and the more you're able to stay positive, no matter what you're dealing with, you're going to heal faster. So, I haven't seen anything bad yet. Dr. Weeks goes on to say that eccentrics, or at least the people who have been, he had diagnosed, but determined to be eccentrics, he says they're often healthier, happier, live longer, are far more optimistic, and less stressed than the card-carrying conformist that everyone seems to want to be like. Well, you know what? You know my opinion of conformity. Okay? I've written about that. One day we'll have a mild combination short segment and rant on my opinion of the card-carrying conformist. Eccentrics know they're different, and they couldn't be more pleased being different, says Dr. Weeks. They glory in their difference, and they go to great lengths to maintain that difference. I personally couldn't agree more. And I know for a fact that I am an eccentric. So if you feel that you are, or you feel you're a little different, you know, don't worry about it. I'm not saying you have to become an eccentric in order to do things differently. Not at all. But what is fascinating about Dr. Weeks' study is that those among us who do think the most differently seem to be the happiest, healthiest, and they also seem to get the most done. It's 1 minute before the bottom of the hour, and we're going to get a little bit more of our musical guest host. That's the master guitarist, one of my all-time favorites, and one that I think that most represents my good friend Bill Moya, who is, I consider, a giant of jazz, even though he's not recognized internationally that way, and lives right here in the Valley, as well as does George Benson. And here is a little bit, as we go to break, of Mr. Kenny Burrell. Let's check it out. Said to you earlier, this comes from a live performance from the Village Vanguard in New York, CD entitled Midnight at the Village Vanguard with Kenny Burrell, my one and only love. My name is Mac Newton. You're listening to the Power Hour. You stay right where you are. We will be right back. Hi gang, I'm Mac Newton, and as much as you enjoy listening to the Power Hour and the feeling you get being shown the way, a way to get the most out of yourself, sometimes it boils down to just you and where you are. But no matter where you are, you're always going to have something that can go with you. www.macnewton.com. No matter where you are or where you may be, you'll be able to log on and work out with me, Mac Daddy. I mean, exactly the same workout that Aeneas Williams did, the same workout that Bo Jackson did, the same workout that Jay Novacek did, the same workout that Ricky Henderson did, the same workout that Dan O'Brien, the Olympian gold medalist, did. Yes, you, wherever you may be. www.macnewton.com, the home for champions, the home for winners, where you can read about success every day, no matter where you are, where you can work out and feel that you are on your path to accomplishing your goal. And let's say you don't want to be an Olympian, you're not interested in playing football. Well, what do you think a chief executive officer is but a top performing athlete? And you too need to be in the best shape of your life. There you have it. No matter who you are or where you are, www.macnewton.com is for you. Tune in today. I'm Mac Newton. Welcome back. A whole different side of Kenny Burrell. Zach, I bet you never even heard of Kenny Burrell.
Only from one of your t-shirts.
Parker's Blues. I sure hope that's the title of that song. I know it's his tribute to Charlie Parker. And see, that's what guitarists do these days. When amplification make their guitar sound like just about anything they want to. You should hear George Benson make his guitar sound like a bagpipe. That's right, a Scottish bagpipe.
Almost sounded like a little Clapton for a second. But, you know, I know this is the original.
Well, Eric Clapton is a master of the guitar and a giant in our music field today. But we do know that Eric Clapton has learned from all the giants of jazz and blues, and is one will be the first to say so. Eric Clapton has my undying respect as a true professional in the music world. And one day we're going to feature him right here on the Power Hour. But right now we're listening to Charlie Parker. We're listening to Kenny Burrell. Made me think he was Charlie Parker. Welcome back, gang. I hope I've given you enough teasing to get you out there and pick up a little bit of Kenny Burrell's music, and because he's a great gentleman and certainly deserves your appreciation. All right, 34 minutes past the hour on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I sure hope it's wonderful where you are. You're in the middle of a live radio broadcast. We do it every Wednesday here from 5 to 6, and by the virtue of the fact it's live, anything can happen. You never know. Sitting in with me as usual, the fabulous Natasha and the magic man behind the glass making things happen. Natasha, where did we end up at last week? I personally think that we had given you a couple of different ways that you can break the habit of a guilty personality.
You're absolutely right. One was silence. You can do it by being silent.
Okay.
Or broken record.
Oh, I know what that is. Yeah. Okay. Use the broken record technique. Very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. What we're talking about here is that we've spent the last few weeks describing a guilty personality. And by that, I mean a person who has the feeling that they're not worth as much as someone else may be, that they have a deep-rooted feeling of worthlessness, and that leads to feelings of inadequacy and insecurity and feelings of undeservingness. You can always tell if you have a guilty personality because every time someone tries to make you feel guilty, you know, with that irritating, questioning mentality, and you want to explain yourself, you want to apologize, you want to defend yourself. And we went into other indicators, about five of them. Well, right now we're talking about ways to rid yourself of these feelings of guilt that interfere with your happiness. And the first thing we said was to eliminate destructive self-criticism. Never criticize yourself for anything. And then I went on to say never allow anyone else to criticize you. Now, if you missed those segments, go back to last week or the week before. They're still here online. Okay? And catch up with that. Now, third, number three, refuse to be manipulated by guilt-throwing behavior. Every time anyone says or does anything to make you feel guilty, and if you give in or acquiesce to their demands, you're doing nothing but reinforcing the guilty feelings and making it easier for people to manipulate you. I personally think we should all have a decent respect for the feelings and needs of others, but this doesn't mean that I have to sacrifice my emotional integrity to people by accepting their guilt manipulation. Now, there's probably at least one person in your life, maybe more, who is very good and accustomed to interacting with you on the basis of making you feel guilty. It could be your mother. It could be a spouse, a boss, a coworker. You may even be in a relationship with someone in which guilt is the basic operating procedure. In any case, you are the one responsible for changing this dynamic in the relationship. Don't wait for the person to change. They're not. Because you know why they're not? Because what they're doing with you works. You can get someone to accept the guilt. You can manipulate them like a fish on the hook. That's why people use guilt. You can control their money, their emotions, their feelings. You can make them feel bad. You can make them feel insignificant. You can control them. That's why people use guilt. It works. And they're going to continue to do it until you change the dynamic. So, I'm going to give you two techniques. In fact, we started with that last week, right, Natasha?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Two techniques that you can use to break another person of the habit of using, trying to use this to control you. The first and the easiest way was, you said?
Silence.
Silence. Basically, it takes two to tango. If you refuse to respond, game over. The next time someone attempts to use guilt on you, just go completely silent. Say nothing. Refuse to answer. Don't allow yourself to be brought into this game. You got to remember one thing, gang. And this is very important. If you are a victim of guilt manipulation, you've been conditioned to respond automatically to it, probably since early childhood. And you're going to have a tremendous urge to want to respond by defending yourself or apologizing or explaining yourself. So you're going to have to exert tremendous mental control and refuse to react. Because in the face of that guilt, you're going to want to do that because you've been programmed for so long. But every time you refuse to react, every time you refuse to respond, you become stronger. And you become more capable of dealing with this person and the situation. Now, here's what happens next. When you go silent, now, the other person eventually is going to ask you what you have to say. And your response to that is, I have nothing to say. I'm not going to respond to that. They're going to respond, they're going to be incredulous. Well, what do you mean? Well, I have nothing to say. I refuse to respond to that. I mean, be polite, be friendly, be courteous, and even smile, even if you're on the phone. Resist the temptation to explain yourself. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to explain yourself to anyone at any time. Why? Because you're in charge. And this behavior will keep you in charge. Now at some point we can build a mutually respectful relationship. People who are used to getting the things they want by using guilt, they're not going to give up that easy. They're going to respond, usually with anger, especially as you try to change the rules. Wait a minute, why are you going to change the rules of the game at this point? It's been working at this point. Yeah, it's been working for you. It's not working for me. And they're going to pull out all the stops trying to get their control back. They're not going to give up. They're going to resist their loss of power. So you got to be prepared for this, and you don't give in. Remember, you want either a healthy relationship or none at all. That's it. You want a healthy relationship or no relationship at all. You can't make a relationship based on guilt work halfway. Maybe I can. No, can't do it. Now, the second method that you can use is called
broken record.
The broken record. And we call it that because you're going to sound like one when you do this. Because every time someone tries to make you feel guilty, you're going to say these words. You're not trying to make me feel guilty, are you? And you're going to say it every single time they say it to you. And you're going to sound like a broken record. And they may even say it to you. You sound like a broken record. You sound like a broken record. Can't you say something else besides that? Well, soon as you do, soon as you start talking to me like I'm a real live human being, instead of trying to manipulate me using guilt. So when someone tries to make you feel guilty, you say, you're not trying to make me feel guilty, are you? Well, the first time they're going to say, no, I'm not. Where'd you get that idea from? Well, I don't know. Just seemed like to me you were. Well, I'm not. Okay, fine, never mind. Okay, go back to the conversation. They're going to use it again right away. You know why?
Because that's what they do.
That's what they do. It's their habit. They're going to do it, you know? And they're going to try to make you feel guilty again. You stop the conversation immediately, even if you're on the phone and you smile sweetly and you go, you're not trying to make me feel guilty, are you? They're going to go, not again? Well, finally, you know what they're going to say? They're going to say, they're going to realize it. Yeah, I am. Okay, what are you going to do about it? I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Every time you try to do this, I'm going to bring it to your level of awareness. Somewhere in your brain, I'm going to get to that point where you can't communicate with me that way anymore. And every time you do it, you say, you're not trying to make me feel guilty, are you? Well, you're going to go through a little testy time, but it's going to change the dynamic. It's going to change this relationship. It's going to change it. And it's worked so simple. And it works so beautifully. Okay? It works beautifully. Okay. You can't allow. Okay. As I said, it just works beautifully. It just works absolutely beautiful. Okay? So now, don't stop every single time. Every single time. Are you trying to make me feel guilty? There's just something in the human psyche that just knows that guilt and guilt manipulation is wrong. It's just a bad thing. And I don't think anyone consciously sets out to use it. It's just a habit that we learned as children, and we slip into it as adults. We learn to do whatever works in our relationships with others. And as long as the other person buys in, there's no reason to change. As long as guilt works as well as or better than any other behavior that allows us to get what we want others to do for us, then why should we change? That's why it's done. So, I mean, I've worked on both sides of this equation. And in the long run, it doesn't really work for anything, because using guilt on someone, it really stifles their emotional growth. Because you make them feel more guilty, you make them feel more powerless, you make them feel more insecure, you make them feel undeserving, you make them feel weak. And it just doesn't work. So it doesn't work on either side of it. That's why this is an important topic and why I've spent so much time reviewing. Okay. Now, as I said before, this exchange will keep on going until in exasperation, the other person is going to finally say, yes, I am. And then finally you can scream out, well, it's not going to work. And that is your moment of recognition. That's your moment. It's your signal to stop trying to use guilt and get back to open, honest communication, to where you openly and honestly discuss issues. Eliminating this whole use of guilt gives us no choice but to settle down and talk like mature adults. Zach, am I making sense here with this now? Huh?
Absolutely, sir.
Yeah. What do you think about it, Natasha? What's your opinion? Tell me your opinion about what we talked about.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. And if it gets to this point, but I think in reality, the guilt-troyan people would not change. The people who's guilt catchers, they will change because you're helping them, they're listening to your shows, you know, they'll stop that. But people who throw guilt sometimes, well, very rarely they'll change, but most of the time they won't. It's just going to be a broken relationship. That's what it ends up with.
Well, that's what you want. You either want a healthy relationship or none at all. However, if this relationship is important to the guilt thrower, as you said, and you know, here's a good thing about the broken record or even the silence, but particularly the broken record, it brings to their level of awareness very quickly that this is wrong, and they can see it's wrong, And it really doesn't take anything away from them to change. And I've seen many people change using this method. But I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're right. So you give this a chance. Yes, Zach?
Oh, no, I was just, you know, saying maybe it's something they don't even realize they're doing. But, you know, it's probably definitely going to get testy, you know, when you call somebody out and say, like, oh, are you, you know, say this is how you're acting and whatnot. But, you know, like you said, it's either going to be
all or
not have the relationship.
All or nothing. But that's exactly right. They don't even know they're doing it. They've been doing it since childhood. It's routine. It's the way they've gotten what they've wanted over time. That's why I say in early on, you're going to really be challenged. Because someone uses guilt on you, you've been conditioned since childhood to respond to this guilt. So as you exert this mental control to not give in and explain away, apologize, or defend yourself, because as soon as you do that, you're hooked, you're gone, you're controlled. And they're going to get what they want. Well, they can get what they want, and so can you. But by discussing it as mature human beings with open, mature conversation, respectful conversation, and that's what you want. Discontinuing this whole use of guilt and getting to open, honest, respectful communication. Now, you're not trying to make the other person feel guilty by using guilt. You're not trying to punish him or her for making you feel guilty. Your sole aim in using silence or the broken record is, like I said, it's just to bring their behavior or their knowledge of their behavior to a higher level of awareness. And at that level, you can deal with the guilt and eliminate it from your relationship completely. That's what you're doing. You can both be free of this emotion that is destructive. It's just as destructive, as I said, on the user as it is on the victim. It's destructive both ways, because no one's growing. No one is benefiting from this behavior. It has got to go. All right, it's got to go. Now, finally, another way. A fourth way you can get rid of guilt is to refuse to discuss the guilt of other people. Now, how do I mean that? When people are discussing the guilt of others, never do that. In other words, no gossip. See, that's what gossip is. You're discussing the guilt of other people. When people try to come to me with gossip, I usually say, you know what? I really don't want to hear it. You shouldn't be talking about it. It's probably someone else's business, and I don't really care about it. Don't discuss the guilt of others. Refuse to get into that, you know, the old, well, ain't that awful kind of mentality. Oh, ain't that awful? No. Conversation. Eliminate backbiting and bad mouthing, and, you know, just eliminate even people that do that from your circle. Remember, everything you talk about, everything you think about is having influence on you, is having influence on you mentally and spiritually. Everything. Make sure that what you're saying about others is what you would want to be true for you. In other words, and this is what I always do. Here's an easy way to think about it. Talk about others as if they were present. Don't say anything about anyone that you wouldn't say if they were right there. Talk about others if they were present. And here's the caveat. And you wanted to make them feel good about themselves. Ah. So you say, well, I'd say that to their face, but do you think that's going to make them feel good about themselves or bad about themselves? Well, if you think it's going to make them feel bad about themselves, why would you say that to their face? Why would you say that? I mean, great grandma used to always say, I mean, if you've got nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. And once you start doing that, because see, gossiping is a side of insecurity. You're trying to make yourself feel better by saying, ain't it awful about what's happening to so-and-so? All this gossip, it's like trying to build you up, build up your feelings of undeservingness and insecurity and inadequacy. People never see that often. But it dawned on me about 8 years ago, as I was listening, to this person gossip. And I think, how insecure are you? I'm thinking to myself that you have to resort to that to make yourself feel better. And finally, the fifth way, and I'm going to start this, but this is going to be our whole show next week, and at the end of our segment on guilt and guilt manipulation. The fifth way to eliminate guilty feelings and reactions is probably the most effective method of all on the earth. It is perhaps the most powerful and practical principle ever taught to build health, happiness, wonderful relationships, prosperity, wealth development. It's really what I've been referring to over the last 3 weeks. And before I even tell you what it is, I'm going to tell you how it came about. When people look at my life today, what they see is a person living a full, rich life. A person who sets goals and reaches them. And along the way, experiences other great opportunities that came my way because of the goals I set in the first place. I'm surrounded by interesting, challenging people. I'm surrounded by geniuses, really. I found that in the days when I was insecure, that being around challenging, confident, driven individuals used to intimidate me. I revel in it. I like to say to myself now, if I've got a project going on and I've hired 5 or 6 people to help me with it, I want to be the dumbest guy in the room. But not before. I was always the smartest guy in the room. So how much was going to come out of that? What we're talking about here, this principle, this practical and powerful principle, is called the law of forgiveness. The law of forgiveness. And it says this: you are mentally healthy to the exact degree to which you can freely forgive and forget offenses against you. You are mentally healthy to the exact degree to which you can freely forgive and forget. Forgive and forget offenses against you. The inability to forgive lies at the very root of all guilt. In fact, most all negative emotions, holding grudges and remaining angry toward people who you feel have hurt you, is the major cause of all psychosomatic illness. Natasha, do you know what psychosomatic illness means? Do you?
No, I can't explain it.
In English is not Natasha's first language. Here's what it means. The psyche refers to the mind, and the soma refers to the body. Psychosomatic illness. The body is sick, but the sickness came from the mind. In other words, the symptoms are real, but the cause of it came from your own thinking. Back in the 20s, doctors used to think that 20% of all our illnesses were psychosomatic in nature. In the 40s, doctors thought 40% is kind of gone, decade by decade as the percentage. By the 40s and 50s, doctors thought that 50% of all of our illnesses were psychosomatic in nature. In other words, the symptoms were real, but it was something caused from our mind. It had no cause in reality at all. By the 90s, doctors were thinking that up to 90% of all of our illnesses are psychosomatic in nature. Well, now doctors are thinking up close to 95-98% of all of our illnesses. Illnesses as dangerous as heart attacks and cancer and strokes. I mean, it runs the whole gamut from simple headaches to skin breakouts, all the way up to cancer, strokes, heart attacks. This inability to forgive. This inability to forgive is at the root cause, the major cause of psychosomatic illness. So, in my opinion, gang, it's simple. To fulfill your potential, to become the person you want to be, to live that full, exciting life, to surround yourself with dynamic, exciting individuals where you can't wait to get up every morning and see what life has to offer for you, where you're excited about every element that life is, you absolutely must forgive everyone who has ever hurt you in any way. Let me say it again. You absolutely must forgive everyone who has ever hurt you in any way. You must let go and walk away. Walk away from your anger. Walk away from your bitterness. Walk away from your resentment. You have to walk away. Let go and walk away and don't look back. You must refuse to continue paying this bill over and over. What bill am I talking about? I'm saying the bill for the same unfortunate experience. And you keep paying it over and over and over with guilt and feelings of insecurity and undeservingness and inadequacy. Not to mention all the psychosomatic illness and all the drugs we take. All the drugs we take to go to sleep and the drugs to wake up and drugs to control our pain and to control our cholesterol. You've got to put your desire to live a better life, to live a great life, to develop a fine character, a character of purpose. You've got to put this on a higher plane than just any negative emotion that you might still be holding against another person. You've got to put your desire for those things higher than that. Okay, next week, I'm going to show you how to practice it. Make sure we start off in the right place, okay, Natasha?
Oh, absolutely.
Next week, I'm going to show you how to practice it. I'm going to tell you how to get it going. I'm going to tell you how to make this thing work. Okay? All right. It is 1 minute right before the top of the hour, gang. Our musical guest host today, the great Kenny Burrell. And I surely encourage you to get his album, Midnight at the Village Vanguard, recorded in 1994-ish, at the Village Vanguard in New York. I've had this CD for years, and I listen to it, and I can tell right now if I can make sure that Zach doesn't take it on him, because almost after every show, he goes, I'm going to burn that. So I'll probably be listening to this on the way home tonight. Kenny Burrell, turn it up a little bit for us. Hey, gang, I want to remind you to be true to yourself, and you know what I mean by that. What I'm saying is make sure your words and your behaviors match. Okay? As always, thanks to Bob Adlock. Man, you are the man. You put that show on the air. You took it upon your own shoulders to say, that guy has got something. I'm going to put him on Cox 9. That started the whole ball rolling, gang. And you know one thing with me? I never forget people that helped me along the way. I never have and never will. That's why I'm giving another shout out to my man, Pat Mack. Pat McMahon, my mentor forever. JC, John Cannon up in San Fran. He's my co-host for the rest of my journey here. My main man, John Booker. And of course, the magic man behind the glass. Thanks for getting on board today, Zach. I appreciate that. And for my co-host, my co-pilot, yes, the lady herself, the fabulous Natasha. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Looking good as usual. I can't say what that shirt says because it's backwards and upside down. It's supposed to be that way.
It's not backwards. It's just upside down.
Just upside down.
It says blonde.
Blonde.
So everybody can know I'm blonde.
Okay. There you have it. The Russian blonde. Hey, guys, you guys be good to yourselves. My name is Mac Newton. They just call me the Mac Daddy. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, 3, 2, 1, peace. The Mac Daddy is...